All right, good morning, everyone, or good afternoon, good evening. Seems to be an echo, so if you, if people can mute their phones for now, before the discussion starts. All right, so is the sound workable for everyone? I can type in the Adobe if any issues. All right, so this is an open conference call on the rights protection mechanism requirements. This was a document that was posted recently, and we're having some continuing discussions on it. I just advise everyone on the call that the call is being recorded. The slides from the call and the recording will be posted after we're finished. We've allotted 2 hours for the call, and we may use all of that in the discussion or not, depending on how the discussion goes. So the agenda of what we're intending to cover, I'll give a little bit of an introduction on the objectives and the background on the document that's under discussion. I've listed out 5 or so discussion topics, and these were on the feedback that has been received to date, the topics that generated the most comments and questions. So I've called those out specifically. We have about 15 to 20 minutes each for those, and then there's also some, received some suggestions for line edits and clarifications, which were helpful. There were also a handful of other topics that generated some comment, and then there'll be time at the end for anything that we didn't cover that anyone on the call wants to raise.
Hello, everyone.
Hello, welcome.
Hi, this is Nacho.
Hello, Nacho. All right, so in terms of what we want to accomplish on this call, and some background on the document that's under discussion, the draft version of the RPM requirements was published on April 6th. There's a link there. It may be helpful because we will refer to specific sections in the document if you have that available to you. There was some initial discussion and feedback during the Meet the Meeting in Beijing and following that. So this call is really intended to generate some broader discussion and also deeper discussion. I think we recognize that not everybody was at the session that we held in Beijing, and not everybody may have had a chance to review and understand the document. So the intention is to have a fuller discussion on the document on this call, and I'll take an opportunity to do that. And then the next step will be for us to synthesize and analyze all the comments and questions that we've gotten to turn around and publish a new version of the document. That's to be informed by the feedback received. In terms of what the document is about, the Registry Agreement Specification 7, this is the registry agreement that all of the new GTLD registries will enter with ICANN. Specification 7 includes the minimum requirements for rights protection mechanisms. And the text is included there on the slide, provides that registry operator will implement the RPMs, mandatory RPMs set forth, meaning trademark claims and sunrise services posted at, there's a placeholder reference for a URL to be inserted when final clearinghouse is adopted. So the RPM requirements document is intended to fulfill that placeholder reference. It includes, sort of the technical and non-technical requirements for how new GTLD registry operators are going to implement the sunrise and claims processes. Uh, And then also in introduction and in framing this, I wanted to review the some of the considerations that that we had in mind when creating the first draft of these of the RPM requirements. So the first bullet, which is also the sentence also is in the introduction to the document that's posted. So the registry operator has discretion to implement its TLU startup phases in accordance with its own business and operational model so long as the minimum requirements are met. So the goal of having rights protection mechanisms is obviously to have some effective procedures in place that support the goal of rights protection. And so, you know, with the understanding that there will be a variety, you know, there are a variety of applications with a variety of different setups and goals. And so the balancing that we've tried to do is to allow those to be built around a set of minimum requirements. So that's one of the considerations. The second more standardization of procedures. So what this really is about is a little bit of a shift from what's been done in the past. So there is, you know, there have been kind of as new DLDs that have launched, it's been a sort of a one-off process or a process where the startup plan was heavily reviewed or negotiated or approved. And so what we're now trying to do is create a standard Sunrise in line with the you know the first bullet point that there is a sort of baseline set of requirements that's always fulfilled regardless of the the type of registry and the other things that they're doing. And then finally the last point there has to do with making information available. So it's we have a goal of availability and consistency of information to promote rights holder and consumer knowledge. So in light of the volume of new gTLD applications and the potential for several new TLDs to be coming online at once, there's been, you know, requests for, you know, advance notice of dates, for example, and a sort of centralized or reliable source of information as to what the Sunrise plans are for the various TLDs as they're starting up. So we're aiming to create some. I mean, with that in mind, we're aiming to create some consistency in the terminology that's used, some consistency in the baseline requirements, and then ICANN has said that, you know, we will support the, you know, the goal to create a sort of a default reference for how all of these things are captured, and so one of the considerations in drafting that is how in drafting this was how that could interact with provision of information generally. So with that, we'll move into the discussion topics. as I said, there were sort of a handful of topics that or sections that people focused on that we got feedback on. And so I'll review some of those, and then for each of these have an open discussion for anybody who wants to comment. So the first topic that topic of interest was the scheduling of the Sunrise, and I'll flip just for a second to the slide that was shown during the session in Beijing about the timing of Sunrise and claims period. So according to the current draft, the Sunrise is going to take priority over any of the other periods. There's a required Sunrise and there's a required claims period. And to the extent that the registry wants to create additional sort of priority periods in the startup process, they can do that. That's termed a limited registration period. But that needs to come after the sunrise. So, flipping back. So the sunrise, was part of the discussions during development of the new GTLD program, and the outcome of those discussions was that it would be required of everybody. When we've gotten questions, throughout, over the last, year or so, months or year, about, how this can be implemented, in sessions or in the customer service inquiries that we get, we've responded that, the registry has discretion to schedule the periods to fit their TLD so long as the trademark rights are given priority as the sunrise is a rights protection mechanism. And so we have here the sunrise is intended to provide an opportunity, an early opportunity to rights holders to register names in the TLD with the sort of general rule that it's a rights protection mechanism that will offer priority based on the verified trademark data. So a lot of the feedback had to do with whether there could be exceptions or whether that rule needed to apply in all cases, whether there were certain other permutations or other type of registration periods that could precede the sunrise. So that was one of the themes of feedback that we got. Some of the examples, and this is the first bullet here under feedback and questions, should limited registration periods be able to precede sunrise? So one of the, some of the examples that people use were government institutions, for example. Would there be a concern about allocating those types of names or giving those before the sunrise, or organizations that were relevant to the community or the industry relating to the TLD. So those were some examples. So that's one of the questions that we have here for discussion, is whether and in what cases there should be something that precedes the sunrise. And then I'll just go through these points quickly and then open it up for comment. So the second point that we got questions about is whether a registry can implement prioritization within a sunrise. The reference in 2.4.1 about equal treatment seemed to maybe not be very clear about what was intended. So the idea, I think, as people have described it, is within the priority that's granted in Sunrise, can you prioritize within the eligible trademarks according to a certain policy, such as if a registry has a particular geographic orientation, can they give priority to trademarks that are registered or have been issued in that region, as opposed to all of the other trademarks. So I think in this point we may need more of a distinction here. If names are being allocated, to other parties that also have rights, I don't think that. This is that case that I described about giving priority to certain marks according to the orientation of the TLD, I think has been discussed for a while. And I'm not sure is a problem. So I want to get some clarity and feedback on that. And then the last question we got is around, can a registry run periods in parallel? The document right now sort of makes them all sequential. And particularly the we got questions about whether you could make a distinction between collecting applications for names while another period is going on versus as long as the prioritization is respected. So the document is really silent on that right now. The only question that I would throw out there is it confusing if there are several periods running simultaneously and there are rules about what can be requested when and then when things get allocated in different sort of chunks all happening. Is that potentially an issue? But other than that, I think that that covers the comments that we got on with relation to the timing of the sunrise. And there were some suggestions as to edits that would potentially address some of the questions that people had. So I want to open it up now for anybody who wants to provide any other feedback on this section. I have one hand. I have Amadeo and then Chuck.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, this is Amadeo, as you'll probably recognize by the accent and the time zone. I have some comments on the three of them. First of all, I would just say that CORE fully supports having a standard sunrise process because for anybody except the concrete registry is much better. But standard does not mean completely uniform, and we think that you should allow for some minimum exceptions. And the three rules here are three of them. The first one is regarding, as you said, the priority. And we provide these two examples. One is regarding the question for geographic-specific names, where public authorities and other relevant authorities that, according to their local trademark law, cannot register geographic names as trademarks. This is a fact in most jurisdictions. Should be protected somehow. Otherwise, it would be a complete disaster and completely confusing to the consumer. And by the way, they will pay probably less and come in less number than trademarks, so it's not in the economic interest of the registry, but it's certainly in the interest of the users not to be confused about who has the most relevant names for that geographic location. And the same for the community. So here you have been, you've seen three different proposals. One is to delete completely the clause where it mandates sunrise being the first. We would accept that, but it's not the one that we advocate, because then any registry could have a completely non-standard sunrise. The second one is just to say, I think that was Validius who proposed that this should be done according to the rules of each GTLD, and we go one step further, and we think that this should be done indeed according to the rules of each specific TLD, but reflected on Specification 7. This is the role of a Specification 7 of the agreement. So what we propose is that we have the standard, but we can just propose to ICANN individually exceptions that, are checked from a policy perspective and are public. It will not come just as a surprise later on. It's not complete discretion by the registry, but the registry has the right to propose this change of orders. And I said, it's not in all the TLDs, but in many TLDs we see not just the convenience, but the absolute need. Another question that I don't want to raise now, but some other people would raise, is the question of what so-called premium names and sunrise, but I think that other people would talk to that more to the point. The second question is the one you mentioned about distinguishing between phases. And once again, here is a fact of trademark law. Let's go again to the fact of, a geographic TLD is not the only case. Take, for instance, a one that's not geographic. Take the case of, for instance, a TLD and a concrete IDN, right? But let's take the geographic one because it makes more sense. Let's take those Paris as an example. It only makes sense to protect the trademark rights and to protect the consumers, in the users of those Paris, that the trademarks that have validity in that territory, so the trademarks that really have legal effect in that territory, have some protection, that is some priority over trademarks that are only valid, say, in Australia or the United States. but have no presence. You could say, well, then they could have a different eligibility restriction. But, for instance, Google perhaps has no physical presence in France, but they have activities there. TripAdvisor may not have physical activity in Paris, but probably TripAdvisor.Paris makes sense because they are providing services there. The other question is that any foreign trademark would have the same or better rights than any local trademark. And once again, if you have all the local recognizable trademarks just taken by somebody that's in a foreign market, simply because they were in trademark clearing house and they were faster or they had more money in the auctions, whatever, this would create a confusion to the users. So it clearly makes sense. This has been done previously in .asia and .cat, and the intellectual property interests were clapping their hands. They considered it was a good idea. Nobody had a complaint. So before saying that this is just to protect trademarks in equality, let's make sure that we are not overprotecting above what they really request. And I don't think that anybody would claim that at least, we would have other examples, but at the very least for geographically based TLDs, trademarks that have a legal effect in that territory could have priority over trademarks that don't have the legal effect. Okay? The third one, I am surprised because you say that the document says nothing about how the phases have to be organized, but I think it's very clear that you say that have to be in successive phases. Okay? So now, my summary is that for the first part, it's not that they should have priority, but in some cases, some phases, not all of them, and not for all TLDs, could have priority over the trademark sunrise. And the second one is that within the trademark rights, yes, there are some cases in which there could be some sort of, priority A, priority B among them. And on the phases, I think it's better that we discuss in a different way because it's not a question of rights, it's a question of internal organization. I would prefer to separate that. Thanks.
Thank you, Amadeo. So I'll respond to a couple of things. One is your suggestion, I think, is helpful as a possible solution to this. I think there have been other suggestions as well, but the suggestion I think Dave is putting on the table is create an exception process. So there are general rules, and then you can define a sort of case by case process where a registry would negotiate or work out a different sort of procedure or variation, and that would be reflected in specification 7. The other point you made, Amadeo, about being able to prioritize different types of marks within the sunrise, I think I haven't heard anyone object to that, as you said, but if anyone has an objection, they can feel free to speak up. But thank you for those comments. I'm getting some requests that people can or to remind people to mute their phones if they're not speaking so that we can all hear. So next is Chuck.
Good morning, Karen. I can say that since we're both on the same coast, I think. Thanks for scheduling this, and thanks for all the hard work you've done on this, as well as the whole new GTLD program. Just a real quick question. You made reference to Section 241 and the term equal treatment. Is it fair to assume that that will be clarified in the document?
Yeah, thanks, Chuck. Yes, it is. I think that there needs to be more of a distinction. The type of scenario where Amadeo is talking about is not necessarily what was aimed at when in using that phrase. It was more about many rights holders in many countries might have a trademark on the same, matching the same domain name. So you might have several different rights holders with valid SMDs coming to you in the sunrise and presenting requests to register the names. So the intention was to guard against the registry sort of arbitrarily you know, turning one down or whatnot, not about policies that a registry might have for how to prioritize among the marks.
Thanks.
Thank you. Palage, Mike Palage.
Thank you, Karen. I'd like to join in, Chuck, in thanking you for your hard and thankless work. So I have a question and a comment. First, my question. Has the ICANN legal department actually looked at how previous registries that have used a Sunrise, what mechanisms they have done to deal with exceptions, both reserve name lists as well as RFPs?
So the answer to that is yes. I think we haven't, we all have, looked at what registries have done before in terms of doing, several phases within a Sunrise, for example. We haven't, studied them each in detail in terms of the, fine list of reserve names and all of that, but we did look at what's been done in the past.
So, just follow up. So, did you look at what WIPO did? Because I believe one of the factors here that we're going to have to consider, many of, I think, new GTLD applicants are concerned about how the intellectual property community may somehow advocate something inconsistent with business plans that have been put forward. So, given that reality, I would particularly like to draw ICANN's attention to what was done in both .mobi, which had a premium list, as well as what was done in .asia. And in both of those situations, there was a dispute process by which IP owners had the ability to contest either premium RFPs or premium names. And this was done by the World Intellectual Property Organization, and they actually prepared reports. So I would just point to those facts, because if ICANN is going to be taking heat, it would really, I think, be constructive for them to rely upon the World Intellectual Property Organization that has previously tackled this. So.
Okay. Thank you, Mike. Next, Jeff Newman.
Yes. Hi, guys. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, I just want to make some general comments, because I did submit a whole bunch of very specific comments, and I'm assuming, Karen, you have those, and
you're
looking at those.
Yep.
So my general comments are kind of in line with some of the comments that have been received. The first thing is, I think this requirements document, unfortunately, has been, I know Mike asked the question, has legal looked at it? Mike, I'll answer you that question. Say absolutely the legal has looked at it, because they've turned the requirements document into a legal document as opposed to requirements. I would strongly encourage all of the, quote, legal requirements like equal treatment to be stripped out of the requirements document, because I don't believe those are actual requirements, but are more legal terms and conditions. And by the way, those are dealt with in the main registry agreement anyway, so I don't think they need to be dealt with here. And I don't think we need to come up with a whole bunch of new set of rules as to what constitutes equal treatment. That's the first comment. And the second comment is kind of dovetailing on what Mike said. You know, I think ICANN really needs to look, number one, at the previous registries that have all launched, none of which that have had problems of the nature that we're starting to sort of hypothesize here for the IP community. Whether you look back at every single Sunrise since, .eu, and Mike said Mobi and Asia, and I'll tell you about, Travel and CO and ME and a whole bunch of others that have launched, and XXX, they have not had the problems that, let me go back a step. I'm not sure of what the problem ICANN is trying to solve in any of these additional requirements. And I think before we come up with a solution, we need to actually come up with a list of problems, and there are no problems that I believe we're trying to solve other than ones that have been created in certain people's minds. And the other thing I want to actually disagree a little bit with Amadeo, although I agree with the concept of having a standard Sunrise, I do not think that we should set a standard that's going to have every single registry negotiating yet another subject in the, quote, negotiations that take place during the contract phase. I think whatever the standard process is, it needs to recognize the normal flexibility and innovation that registries have done to date, and we should not be encouraging everyone to go to ICANN Legal to make some policy determination or business determination that it's not qualified to make. So the answer to your question, should limited registration periods be able to proceed sometime? Absolutely. In the same way it's been done in every single launch date, the same way that almost everybody proposed in their question 18 on how their registration process is going to work. If an applicant's going to do their sunrise and their launch mechanisms in accordance with their application, then absolutely it should be allowed without any negotiation being done. Can a registry implement prioritization with the sunrise? The answer to that is absolutely yes. That's been done, again, with every single sunrise to date with never a problem. And can a registry run periods in parallel? I think that's not even a question for this group. I think the rules so far, even before this document came out, were pretty clear that when a sunrise is to apply when claims, and trying to control when someone collects applications is just, again, an unnecessary regulation that has no bearing on the business of any registry that's operated before. So let's not create new problems that don't even exist. Let's create a requirements document that reflects all of the discussions and sunrises that have taken place, and let's move on with this. I think half of things in the requirements document are newly created problems that don't actually exist in reality. Thanks.
Thank you, Jeff. So a couple of points here. So I think we understand the desire for flexibility in the GTLDs as they're launching. Somebody was just commenting in the chat that was, you know, kind of the spirit of the new GTLD program is that there be innovation and there be new entrants appearing. I wouldn't say that we went about creating this document as a response to a problem or a set of problems. The requirements in terms of everyone has to do a sunrise and claims in the guidebook are fairly brief and don't really speak to a lot of the detail about what registries can do. And it's really not ICANN's intention to be heavily involved in reviewing and trying to be involved in every registry and what they're doing and what they're not doing. I think the situation that we're facing is that we have a large number of TLDs expected. We have committed to do these rights protections in the new GTLD space as kind of an enhancement to what exists, and that there are a baseline set of requirements. And so to say, just sort of briefly, you have to do sunrise and claims and not know, and just sort of, anything goes as long as you do that is a little bit difficult. I mean, some of the things that registries, most of the things that I've heard of that registries are suggesting are not necessarily incompatible with protection of trademark rights or IP rights, but I don't think it's clear that anything a registry would do would be in line with that principle as well. And so we've been trying to create a sort of as minimal as we can set of standards that will at least provide some level of consistency there. But I understand the desire that people have been expressing for more flexibility and room to move in this. So next, I have Nacho.
Karen, can you hear me?
Yes.
A very, very brief follow-up on what both Matteo and Jeff were saying and what you also were saying, that is to provide flexibility. But I think that the flexibility should be provided within the document and negotiation as the only way forward to accommodate this kind of circumstances for, say, GOs, IDNs, or community buildings would not be optimal. One of the possible effects has already been discussed, and that could be delays. But I think there's also another one, and that is that these kind of provisions are optional. And I think that they are not optional. They should be accommodated into the language of the document to specifically state that this kind of situations have to be dealt with in a specific manner. Because some of the examples provided by Amadeu, I think that are not only for the convenience of the registry, but also for the users, which is the communities or the GOs, most of the registries or the operators have them in mind when they are providing the comments to your document. It is understandable that trademarks could be prioritized over public institutions or other relevant parts of the community. And coming back to the feedback and questions provided by you in the Adobe Connect, I think that the answer is very clear. I don't know if the limited registration periods should proceed Sunrise, but they should be allowed to run in parallel. And when it comes to prioritization within the Sunrise, well, I guess that the answer comes with all what has been said. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you. Thank you, Nacho. So this is another suggestion, kind of going along with Amadeo's suggestion that there can be exceptions negotiated or incorporated as part of the Sec 7 for the Civic Registry. And I think what you're suggesting, Nacho, is there can be guidelines for things that are built into the requirements for things that people have agreed are okay. If no one has a problem with allocating names to governments, for example, in an early stage, maybe that's something that can be incorporated. So I think what you're looking for is some additional language that gives some more room on things that aren't controversial. All right, I think I can't tell if these are old hands or new. We have Mike, Jeff, and Amadeo again. Mike, was your question new or old? Old, I guess. Okay, Jeff?
Yeah, no, mine was just, I want to emphasize the point that we really should not be encouraging so many separate negotiations. If someone has, what really should happen is everyone's had their answer to question 18 on how the registration process works. Everyone has had that public for almost a year now, since June, right? Since June it'll be a year. If someone wants to implement their Sunrise and launch mechanisms in accordance with the way that they proposed in their application, unless I can find some legal problem with that, they should not have to do a separate negotiation. That's the whole reason why people set forth their whole application process. The whole reason, for example, why the City of New York set forth all of their phases and the way that they did in the question 18 was to be open and transparent on how they are going to do it, on how they're giving, for example, governmental entities in New York the first right to get names, and how they're giving New York City approved vendors priority over other types of registrants. That's all made well known in question 18, and I really do not like the whole notion of having to separately, quote, negotiate. These applicants have already waited years and years to get their CLDs launched, and I think we take the reverse approach. If anyone has problems with what's mentioned in the question 18, serious problems, and ICANN has problems that it's against the way the guidebook happens, that's when negotiations take place. Otherwise, no negotiations. I strongly recommend that.
Okay, thank you, Jeff. We'll go to Amadeo, and then I'll try to sum up this section, and we'll move on.
Okay. I have two things. The first one is what Jeff just said, and I support that. When I said that this has to be reflected on Specification 7, I wasn't saying that it has to be negotiated. I completely support what he said. Most of us spend lots of time detailing in question 17, 18B5, and 18C, and in many cases in 20E when it was community, how all this will work. Now, perhaps ICANN has decided not to review or not at least to evaluate that, but my proposal was not that we need to renegotiate that, simply that I think that this could be reflected, and this is the verb I'm sure I used, in a Specification 7, you know, to clarify that this is what the registry will do. And then, you know, ICANN could have a right to say, oh, we have a problem here, but I am not proposing at all that we have a specific negotiation way, you know, like we were starting from scratch, like I think that Karen implied. This was not at all my proposal. The second thing, Karen, can you go one slide back, please, in your presentation?
Yes.
Oh, is that a negotiation process?
Which slide, Amadeo?
The one where you had the parallel or the success, I mean, the one that we're showing, no,
one.
This one, okay. Now, on the question of parallel or successive, let's take the bottom part, right, when you have the green part where there is this. Okay, there are two practical reasons why having the phases in parallel is very important. The first one is that in the old days, we were having one TLD sunrise, you know, each month or each year or 3 a year. And everybody could remember when phase two or phase three of each or that would start. With perhaps 20 or 30 starting at the same time and, you know, 100 or 200 running in parallel, it is impossible to remember 5 dates for each one to anybody. Just think about the user. The registries and the registrars know that. Now, so when does phase three, one, the stress of missing your date is too high for any possible registrant. And everybody was telling this to us, to Erit, to .cat, to Asia, to everybody, because some of the side rest phases were running in parallel, but they were still starting in different dates. And that was a nightmare, even with 3 or 4 running in parallel. Imagine 200. Now, the second one is for IP protection. And think about your system now. Imagine that I own the trademark Abril, and I'm not sure that I want to register in .currentLens. But then I see that in the next phase that has no priority over me, it's below me, somebody registers Abril.currentLens. If we run the phases in parallel, I still have the time to register the name and save the time and money of dispute resolution. If I don't, that's lost. I have to wait until general availability and then, you know, file a complaint or whatever. Or sure, I will receive a very nice alert from the Trademark Clearing House saying that I've lost the domain name. So most IP people were telling us that running the phases in parallel, that is, that having the sunrise going to the end of the any pre-launch period, in fact, was protecting them. So once again, I checked this again with many of them individually. I don't think that there is an official IPC position on that, but please be sure that you check with them on these two possibilities. And really, they would be more protected on that. It's exactly the same for public authorities. If you put public authorities, for instance, before Trademark Clearing House, and then they see somebody registering a trademark, and then somebody in, let's say, a lower priority one, if you run that one after the other, they need to be checking that all the time, and they don't have the right to come to a phase in which they are not entitled. They have to wait for the end. If all run in parallel, they can simply take the name with their priority name at any time, no conflict. This solves a lot of conflicts in those that run some phases in parallel. That was the point. Thanks.
Yep, understood. Thank you, Amadeo. So I want to move so we can get to some of the other topics. So. Let me just kind of sum up some of the feedback on this section. And there was a suggestion that's a possibility to negotiate or to sort of have general rules where exceptions are possible. There's a possibility to kind of develop what the exceptions are, put more language around what variations there can be here. There's a suggestion to accept what's in the application unless there's an issue with in terms of the rights protection. There's a suggestion to rely on dispute procedures for anything that is seen as a problem in the registry sunrise. So I think that's all feedback we've gotten, and we'll be considering further. So let's go to the next topic, which there's two slides on this because there were there were several comments and questions around sunrise eligibility. So again, we kind of have a general rule in that sunrise eligibility is meant for trademark holders as the data has been verified verified by the clearinghouse. And so, again, people are looking to define or create variations or different permutations than this. So one of the subjects that we got comment on is whether other rights holders, meaning people who have trademarks that haven't been verified by the clearinghouse, maybe have been verified by some other entity or by the registry, can those be part of the sunrise, or people or registrants that aren't trademark related, can the sunrise eligibility extend to that? So that's one of the questions. I think that again, you're looking to ensure that the sunrise is an effective rights protection mechanism if it, you know, it is open to sort of anything beyond that. It may not serve that purpose, but there may be variations where it makes sense to include other parties in there. And then the second point is really mostly a clarification. This point in section 2.3.1 said that eligibility restrictions needed to be applied equally during sunrise limited registration and claims period. There were a lot of questions on that, and it's obviously something that needs better clarity. So obviously the restrictions or the requirements, the eligibility is going to be different in Sunrise, where there are trademark requirements, and limited registration, where there's probably some other requirement, and general registration, where there probably aren't any trademark requirements necessarily. So it's not intended to say all of those have to be identical. It was really aimed at sort of arbitrariness. So you don't start up a sunrise saying the requirements are, you have to have a trademark of this sort, and then in the middle of it change it to you've got to have a trademark of this sort instead. So that was really the intention. Somebody suggested that consistently would be a better word than equally. So I think there's more drafting that we have to do on that point to clarify that. So any comments on that point or the question about eligibility and how to expand and whether and how to expand that? And Amadeo, is your hand raised again, or was that from before?
I lowered it, raised it again just to show that it was for
okay.
this topic.
All right, thank you.
So let me lower it now immediately. Okay. Now, two questions here. On the first one, there are two topics. The first one is whether rights other than trademarks eligible for the trademark clearinghouse are there, and the example I use is corporate names. That's sort of a distinctive sign right in some jurisdictions, but clearly everywhere has a lower priority than trademarks. So in our case would be, in many things we would accept, in many TLDs, the corporate name as, you know, part of the launch period, but the problem is how we call that. I mean, Sunrise is only for trademarks. Then it would be a different limited registration period with lower priority than trademarks. The other question that's more to the point is, and here I would raise something, Karen, is that we've been trying to contact the trademark owner house to see how we handle things like, you know, geographic designations, you know, champagne, cognac, camembert, these kind of things, gorgonzola in Europe, for geographic TLDs, and they simply don't want to talk to registries. They send us back to ICANN. So we don't know how really to prepare for the sunrise on these kind of questions that in some jurisdictions are really important, but they are not legally trademarks. They are different, and we don't know how to handle that. Now, the other question is, trademarks not validated by trademark clearinghouse. And here we have two examples. The first one is, once again, let's take .Paris or .Barcelona, and you have local trademarks that will only want to register their own name in, you know, where they work, locally. Going to the trademark clearinghouse for them is overkill and too expensive. But, on the other hand, legally speaking, I'm not sure that the registries, some of them public institutions, can tell them that their trademark is not a trademark for the sunrise purposes. Indeed, they have the contract with ICANN. But in some cases, and quite frankly, try to understand me, as a registry, I prefer not to get involved at all in validating trademarks. I've been there. I prefer a third party doing that. In some cases, for instance, GOTLDs, there is no solution for that. And now let me give me another practical example. One of core TLDs is in Arabic script, and it has number 70 in the priority. So it will be very soon, relatively soon, depending on how everything evolves. But, you know, among the first ones. Do you know how much of force has the trademark clearing held on in the Arabic-speaking market? Zero. Nobody knows the existence. If we say that only trademarks in the trademark clearing house are accepted for the sunrise for the first 60 days, we will be, in practice, excluding all trademarks in Arabic script registered in Arabic-speaking countries, because nobody there has yet heard a single word about that. And the trademark clearing house is not very open to explain what are their IDN supporting and their IDN variance practices regarding these scripts. So it might happen that even if we want, the only thing that we could tell them is you have no protection because a trademark clearing house doesn't fit your needs. These are the two examples that we have that we will be forced to accept trademarks that we will validate ourselves outside the trademark clearing house or by a third party. Thanks.
Thank you, Amadeo. So I think what you're expressing is the right idea. If you have, if you are doing a sunrise period and you're granting, offering this priority period to trademark holders where their rights have been verified by the clearinghouse, you know that you are, relying on verified data and that the trademarks have been, determined to be eligible. The question is if that's extended to, certain other things, do you know that, people may not be familiar with or necessarily, the kind of unknown other entities or requirements may or may not be an issue in terms of the rights protection.
Karen, let me say just two things here. The first one is one that Jeff has stressed already a couple of times. All this is in our applications, black and white, very clearly expressed. Second, all this has been negotiated with the IP interest representatives before supplying that to ICANN. And they said they understood perfectly what was the situation. So once again, I'm not claiming that registries should be able to do whatever they want, but they should be able to say what they have, explain clearly that was their plan, with a clear justification. And once again, I think that this should be, it should be not left to the discretion at any time to the registry. This was said in the application. This should be reflected in their official SunRest policy. This should be reflected on the specification 7. And if I can see that this creates a concrete problem, I can have the right to raise a red flag. We are not proposing that anybody does wherever they want, for any reason, at any time. Simply that, I repeat, this has been documented, explained, and negotiated, and should be clearly reflected before launching. It's not that I'm claiming that at mid of the 10-month clearinghouse, half SunRest period, I may start validating whatever trademark I want, whatever, the way I want. This shouldn't be allowed.
Okay, thank you. That's understood. So with respect to the plans that applicants are putting forward, those only need to be an issue if there's a concern from the IP perspective. I don't see any other hands. I have a couple other points still under this topic of SunRest eligibility. So I'll comment on those. One is on section 2.3.1.3, the document right now and speaks specifically to community-based applications, which have some additional terms in their agreements. And the document says that if they have registration, community-based registration restrictions, that they must apply those in the SunRest as well. There's the RRDRP. We came up with a whole procedure about people being concerned about registries not enforcing their community-based restrictions. The kind of case that was presented in response to this document was, whether that could be a may. So, can the registry choose not to apply the eligibility restrictions in SunRest if there's interest in from IP holders, for example, in doing that? If they may not be eligible for general registration in whatever TLD, but they still might be interested in using the SunRest to block a name in some respect. So that's one question, whether anyone, any issues are foreseen with that. And the second one where there was comment or an additional one in this section was in 2.4.3 about how registry policies should be applied at allocation of IDN variant labels during this. So again, this was kind of trying to define the SunRest strict in a very clear and understandable way. There's not in terms of a variant policy there this is established by the registry, the one source or variant IDN table that is always being applied. And so if a registry does have the ability to allocate names in the SunRest that are not in SMD, how to define this so it's not anything goes, the registry gives out anything they want as a according to some policy. There may not be an issue. Some of the comments were saying there may not be an issue if all they're doing is applying their usual IDN policy. If the tables have been submitted in the application and they're applying, character level variant rules, there may not be a concern about allocating those names at the same time during the SunRest. So those are the two other additional questions for discussion here. Chuck?
Thanks, Karen. On 2.4.3, mm-hmm. What does allocated mean? Does it mean delegated, reserved, put in the zone, or something else? And what's really the intent of that clause?
Well, I think it can mean either in this instance. A registry can allocate a name without putting it in the zone, or it can it can sort of register it and make it active in the zone. But the intent was, when we were looking at the sunrise and at the registry gets presented with a request, via the registrar to register a certain domain name in the sunrise, they're presented with a sign mark data file, and the registry is validating two things. One is that the SMD is valid, the signature is valid, and so forth. And the other is that the domain names are covered by the actual SMD. So, I might be a rights holder with an SMD for my trademark, but that doesn't necessarily entitle me to register any domain name. It entitles me to register the labels that are covered by that record. And so, the way we put it was the registry should only in the sunrise be giving out names based on the names that are in the SMD. And if they have a registry policy, such as an IDN variant policy that says, we equate this, when labels with this character are registered, the other one, the variant label to that is blocked, or, when a variant exists, it's allocated to the same registrant, et cetera. So we've said that should they want to apply that, they would do that after the sunrise. So the question that's been raised is whether there's an issue with the registry just applying it, just the variant policy, whether there's an issue with applying that the same way during the sunrise, or whether it's potentially too open if the registry is going to apply some very broad policy in terms of what names get registered. Does that help?
Yeah, I think so. I think it should be clear. It would be helpful if more clarity was added to that clause.
Okay.
Okay? Thank
mm-hmm.
you.
Thank you. All right. Amadeo?
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Okay, it was in mute. Sorry. Two short comments on this. On this one, whether I may understand and share the intent, I think that the language is too strict. One thing that, quite frankly, as a registry or as a provider, we are neutral, is the question that this effectively, as you said, prevents defensive registrations. And this is something that we don't try to make, a business about, but we have heard consistent requests from IP interests saying, we don't want to run the risk of some, being any famous athlete in Turkey that his family name is my trademark, so they qualify for that sport. We prefer being allowed in, the sunrise to block that name. Okay, we won't be able to use that as a domain name registration and in the zone with, servers and web server and mail, etc., because we are not eligible, but we want to block it. And this was the intent of our proposal. Once again, we are neutral, but I would appreciate if you check with them more than with us, whether that is more with intellectual property interest and community applicants, whether they really want that or they don't care, because this was where we're coming from. The second one is more technical. When you say that it should be applied the exact same requirements of eligibility, as I pointed out, sometimes this may not be feasible because, for instance, for trademarks, the minimum base for a trademark is a nation state. You don't have Barcelona trademarks. You don't have Paris trademarks. You don't have New York City trademarks. You may have New York State trademarks, but they are not eligible for the trademark clearing house. But the only ones that would be eligible would be U.S. trademarks. So it has to be the exact match of the eligibility. We may run to complete fiasco on the trademark clearing, in the sunrise for trademarks, which I don't think is at all the intent. So I think it should be compatible with eligibility, but it should not be the exact match of the same eligibility criteria that were supposed to use for, general availability of registrations.
Great. Thank you, Amadeo. Any other comments on this set of questions? All right. So we'll go on to the next next topic. So this is something that's been discussed a little bit on the technical side, but it's not really only a technical concern. So it has to do with various types of processes that a registry might be doing in either Sunrise or claims. So if you have a first-come, first-serve process, that how do you implement Sunrise and how you implement claims is fairly straightforward. We, you know, based on past examples as well as discussions that, you know, things that people put in their applications, you know, registries may be planning to do auctions, RFP, other sorts of non first-come, first-serve processes. So the questions that this raises come out in a couple of ways. In Sunrise, there's a pointer in Section 253 of the document is the maximum, what should be, should there be a maximum time between the time that the signed mark data file gets provided to the registry and when the domain name is registered. This is kind of a security consideration. So if, for example, you know, 10 months go by between when the SMD is provided and when the registration actually takes place, you know, the SMD could have been compromised and been revoked or expired in that time period. So balancing that risk, you know, with the extra steps that the registry may need to take is one of the considerations here. And then in the claims process, this is also a pointer in the document in 343, the question really goes to should there be a maximum time between when a registrant acknowledges a claims notice that gets provided and when the domain name gets registered. So again, you may have, you know, the registry started collecting bids for an auction in January and got acknowledgments of the claims notice then, and then in May or something is when the auction concludes and the name's getting registered to the winning participant. So the question at you know, under consideration here is whether there is some you know, validity period for that acknowledgement. So we've tried to balance this as well. In the document currently, both values are 45 days. So the SMD time to registration would be 45 days, and the maximum time between a claims acknowledgement and a registration would be 45 days. So open for comments on this. Jeff?
Yeah, so can you guys hear me? Sorry.
Yep.
Let me ask the question because you've been doing a lot of asking us questions. Let me ask you the question because you obviously know my view on this 45-day period. Where did you come up with 45 days? How did you come up with it? And what's the logic behind 45 days? And then I'll come back with a comment. So let me ask you guys, where did 45 days come from?
Well, it's kind of, you know, I mean, there's no magic to 45. You know, we understand that or understood that, you know, it should be, you know, sort of not instantaneous, that there's going to be registry processes and that there's a reasonable amount of time that you'd expect, you know, some transaction to still be meaningful, you know, if a registrant was viewing data presented as a certain date, without you know, extending it so you know, so far that it seems to be a security risk or not filling the, you know, not really being helpful to the registrant as you know, the information in the notice could have radically changed, you know, in that time.
Okay, well, just to respond to that, again, I'm not sure what the security risk is, because what we're talking about here, let's take Sunrise, for example. We're talking about a Sunrise information that was validated by the clearinghouse. That information was already authenticated and validated, so we know it to be true. They used that to get the application in. The registry verified that. If that application appears on a revocation list, then I certainly understand why that needs to be taken into consideration. So registry needs to check to make sure when it actually allocates the name, it hasn't been revoked. But anything other than that seems to me, I don't understand the security risk at all. And if you look at past Sunrises and past allocation mechanisms, some of them haven't been for months after the initial information was actually received and validated. So, as I suggested in my comments, a minimum is 6 months, but it should be up to a year for as long as that record is good in the clearinghouse. We should not be creating these extra rules for security risks that I don't think have ever been explained, nor do I fully understand. If it's revoked, it's revoked, and registries will check that. But other than that, having an arbitrary, and you just admitted it's arbitrary, but having an arbitrary expiration date for a file, this to me doesn't seem like it serves anyone's interest. But I'll let others, I know Jim has comments on it too, but I haven't heard anything that would lead me to believe as to why 45 is the right day and why not 6 months or a year.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. So it, just to clarify, it's not the file expiring. It's the time between, that has elapsed when the registry has checked to see whether it is revoked or not. But did I understand you that in every case the registry plans to check if it's revoked?
Well, I'm saying the registry should check to see if it's revoked, but there should not be an arbitrary, and only in the case of it being revoked, that's when the registry can't allocate the name.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, anything other than that seems like it is an expiration. It's nothing more than an expiration of the validity, even for claims. Once it's acknowledged, once a registrant has acknowledged that the claim exists and they want to proceed anyway, having that acknowledgement only lasts 45 days, again, doesn't serve any kind of purpose. So
okay. It's
arbitrary.
Thanks. Jim Gold?
Yeah, I think the key element here is the terminology that's being used here.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that at the time of application create, I consider that a registration request. And at the time that it is, made into an active domain, it is allocation. So I think by saying that it's a registration at the time of allocation, it's making it look like it's a new request that needs to be revalidated. Typically, you would only validate at the time of registration request. So trying to revalidate and have an implied expiry is adding a lot of complexity that I think is not needed based on my definition of a registration request.
So thanks, Jim. Can you maybe clarify for me and maybe others which process you're talking about? So, and maybe the terminology that you use as a registry in how you consider what's the registration request in Sunrise or claims. How does that work?
I see them identical. Like whether or not you're going to do an application during Sunrise or during a land rush. Pretty much, I consider both of those as being pending registration requests going into pending create. And then any back-end validation that's done or an auction or anything like that is done after the validation has occurred. Right? If there's extra validation that needs to occur or if there's an auction, that's after all of these, the S&B validation or the validation of the trademark information is already done.
Okay.
And just to note, one of the reasons why I'm really against this whole concept is it's going to add a lot of complexity. It's going to require a revamp of the protocol, which is not accounted for. So although even if we went to 6 months or 1 year or whatever it is, the protocol still needs to be able to address the issue of it expiring. So we would have to add an expiry attribute. We would have to add poll messaging. We would have to add the ability to be able to update this information after the fact. And it's going to add a lot of complexity that I don't think anybody has really considered.
Okay, thank you. Thanks, Jim. Mark, next.
I would just agree with what Jeff said with regard to the 45-day expiry on the Sunrise side, and I think that part of the purpose behind the TMCH is to, one of many purposes, to reduce the manual burden on the trademark owner, in the face of hundreds of new Sunrise periods, and to have the 45-day expiry period for the SMB really puts that burden right back on the trademark owner to have a manual process of monitoring all the SMBs and having to renew them with regards to various Sunrise periods that they want to enter. And again, as others have mentioned, just adds a lot of complexity to the process that really needs to be in there. SMB is valid as long as entry to the trademark clearinghouse is valid.
Yeah, thank you, Mark. So I think we're agreed on that. And just to be clear, the 45 days validity period that's referenced in the document is not about how long the SMD is valid. The SMD is valid for as long as the trademark record is valid. The 45 days refers to the time between when the registry first accepted it and did validation they do on it, and the time that a name actually gets registered based on that.
But Karen, and this is Jeff, but Mark's absolutely correct that it becomes a burden for the trademark owner based on what the registry actually does. So if a registry takes longer than 45 days from the date that the trademark owner initially submitted their application, and
uh-huh.
Jim's absolutely right, there's an application, a registration request, and a registration, and those an injection of the application request into the registry system. But Mark's right in the sense that if the registry takes longer than 45 days, then the registry somehow, through some process that's never been defined before or done before, the registry has to somehow reach back out to the trademark owner, and the trademark owner would then have to somehow submit a new SMB file through its registrar. And again, this has never been done before. It's never been done that a registry would have to go back directly to a registrant to get them to resubmit a request during the Sunrise. And during the claims, it's actually even worse because somehow the registry has to go back and find the applicant to get them to resubmit their acknowledgement to a process. Again, that's completely undefined. I mean, again, I don't understand, and it's never been explained by ICANN or anyone else, what the security risk is. And absent a clear understanding of a problem, we should not be creating a solution. So has anyone here on this call or before heard the actual problem and actually believes that there is a problem? I have not. My developers have not. The registry stakeholder group has not. And absent any of that, I think we just basically do not have a separate expiration of the acknowledgement or of the SMB. And I know what you said, Karen. It's not an expiration of the SMB. I don't know what to call it. It's an expiration of the time in which a owner has submitted their request, their validated file, to the time that they would actually submit a new file. So I'm not sure of what to call it.
But they and correct me if I'm mistaken here, but the only instance in which anyone is going back to the rights holder is if the SMD was actually revoked.
No, if the SMD is no longer good because it's past that 45 days, then you'd have to go back to the rights holder to get a new SMD.
I don't. That's not how I understand the proposal.
No, it's actually worse than that. It's an application expiry. It doesn't matter whether or not the SMD expired or not. like it could be a valid SMD, but the application was created at the beginning of the sunrise, and then the 45-day period expired. So you could have a perfectly legitimate SMD, and then your application could have expired.
So you would have to go back to the trademark owner to get a new application in that case.
That's correct. Great, Karen. So a concrete example is, you know, if you have your 30-day sunrise period, and let's say the SMD is provided on the first day of the sunrise period, but, you know, the registry doesn't get around to registering the domain name until, I don't know, 16 days after the sunrise period ends, then all of a sudden that SMD is no longer valid.
Well, then the then the application is no longer valid. That's correct.
Right, so now you have to go back to the trademark owner or the owner of the SMD and get another one or get the same one fitted.
Correct. And I have not heard the benefit of why we even have this rule.
If you allow me, this is Amadeu. This is complexity without a clear beneficiary. But on top of that, it also follows a very narrow view how things work. It really views that this works sequentially in very short periods. Why don't you think that perhaps this runs in parallel and sunrise may be 4 months long, and then there is no resolution possible for 120 days? This is something that may happen. So both the mechanism is very strange. Second, it will create cost to all the parties to redo things many times. You know, not only that, we don't know how to do that, as Jeff says. Even if we knew, this will create cost to the trademark applicant, to the registrar, to everybody. Let's forget the registry for once, yeah, but everybody else. And third, it really doesn't fit, even in best-case scenario, with many possible logical sunrises.
Okay, so I'm going to thank you for the comments. I'm going to ask my colleague Gustavo, if he's on the call, to maybe respond a little bit to this, as I'm maybe misinterpreting some of the language. But I don't think it's anyone's intention to put timelines in there that don't serve a benefit and that create more. Work that doesn't serve a benefit. But my understanding of why there was some consideration of whether there should be a period is, there is a risk that if a registry is not checking on some sort of timeline whether an SMD has been revoked, then there's a risk that they're accepting something that does have an issue with it, which it sounded like that the checking for revocation is maybe not the issue. And then the same the same is true for the claims. It's not really the intention to make it difficult, only that the process is designed to provide information that's helpful to a registrant to make a decision on whether they're going to proceed with a with a registration or not. And the only question that sort of lingers in that is, if I'm a rights holder and I've paid to put my mark in the clearinghouse, and the registrant gets shown data that's at a point in time that by the time the name actually gets registered to them, that data may have changed and they may have made a different decision. So if that's not a concern to anybody, then maybe it's not a concern to anybody. But that's the kind of things that we're trying to get at on this call. So Gustavo, can you respond a little bit on the terminology that's being used and anything that I missed in terms of the intention here?
Yeah, so maybe let's talk about the history of that specific validity period, right? So in the first version of the functional specification, one of the requirements was to verify that the SMD has not been revoked or expired at time of effective allocation. We have a conference call with registrars and other parts of the community, and it was mentioned that maybe we could use the sunrise dispute resolution process to handle those issues. And also, so basically what we did with the validity period is in 45 days, you don't need to do a revalidation of the SMB. That means that if the SMB has been revoked or expired, you can proceed with the application, and then using the SunRise dispute resolution process, you will handle that. So that was idea on how to translate that proposal from that conference call into the functional specification. Obviously, if we put 1 year, 2 years, or 3 years, if you want to support that in the protocol, that will obviously require complexity. So one of the proposals was to define a period that is long enough to support all the possible sunrise without having to add that complexity to a protocol, and have this validity period as the worst-case scenario in case something really bad is with the SMB. But that was the idea. I mean, isn't that the intention, obviously, to create more complexity?
Thank you, Gustavo. So Mark and Jim are still in the queue. Do you have additional comments, or was that from previously?
It was from previously, but you know, just in response to what Gustavo said,
uh-huh.
It doesn't seem that you really need that period there. I mean, the sunrise is not going to last that long. The sunrise has to last 30 days. Probably
right.
Not going to last longer. In most cases, at most, it'll probably last 90 days. I don't know that anyone's going to have like a 2-year sunrise period. And from a practical perspective, you know, whether the sunrise period is, you know, 30 days or 90 days or whatever, you know, while it may take, you know, 2 weeks or a month or, you know, I don't know, maybe 2 months to sort through all the applications to actually, you know, issue domain registrations, it's not going to take longer than that. So you're not going to have this really long period. It's not going to be an issue from a practical perspective. So.
Thank you. Thank you, Mark. Jim, did you have another or was that from previous?
Yeah, no, I think I've pretty much said it, but I would just add the fact of adding the expiry, no matter what time frame you set for the validity period, would have to be supported by the protocol. So, I mean, I can understand if we set some date like 6 months to a year, there is still the possibility or there is a policy associated with the applications that need to be reflected in some way. So my concern is that if it happens to go past the period, then we have to support it in some way in the protocol. And if you set it so far out that it would never happen, then what's the point of having it in the first place?
Okay. Thanks, Jim. Jeff?
Yeah, just to respond to Gustavo, I think, again, here we don't need a technical solution for a potential policy problem. So the potential policy problem is not expiration, but it's fraudulent information or some reason that a file was revoked.
Mm-hmm.
And for fraudulent information, we have a sunrise dispute policy. You don't need to impose an arbitrary technical parameter in the protocol to try to prevent against some sort of fraud, which you can handle more effectively in an after-the-fact dispute resolution policy. So it sounds like from Gustavo's explanation, no technical solution is needed, no 45-day expiration of a registration request is needed.
Okay, thanks, Jeff. Kathy?
Hi, can you hear me, Karen?
Yes, I can.
Great. Okay, go. I'm coming into this a little late, so I apologize. But I think I'm not sure the Sunrise dispute process is going to be sufficient here. I hear the concerns that you're voicing, that registrants may be trying to evaluate based on information that's incorrect or out of date or inaccurate. And I think that's a very important issue that we have to consider. So I appreciate your taking that into account. Let me ask a question. In addition to the Sunrise period, where it looks like we're moving towards something where registrants may not have accurate data based on the trademark clearinghouse, do we have the same problem once we open up into general availability? And if so, that's an even bigger problem.
Are you meaning the claims period, Kathy?
Right. Once it opens up into general availability and we're using the trademark clearinghouse with registrants not during the sunrise period, general availability, are we also looking at a situation where registrants could be judging against inaccurate or out-of-date trademark clearinghouse information?
Yeah, so that's the question that I was trying to put on the table with the claims period. What's the maximum time between the acknowledgement and the registration? So, we've heard questions about whether this is really a concern and whether it's really needed. It may create additional complexity in terms of the system if there needs to be additional if a process spans a longer time period where you need to be revisiting the claims again. So that's kind of the question on the table in terms of the information that's provided to the registrant as one component of that.
I think we're obliged to provide the registrant with accurate information. Thank you.
Thanks, Kathy. Jeff?
Yeah, Kathy, you walked in late, so I don't think you realize what we were saying and what you're saying in response. So just to put it into perspective for you, Kathy, what we're saying is during the claims period, if a registrant has acknowledged the claim and said that they want to proceed, we're saying that there should not be an expiration of that acknowledgement. What you're saying is that there should be, and I don't think you really are saying that. So, in other words, what we're saying here is that if for whatever reason during a allocation mechanism, during the general availability lasts longer than 45 days, what you've just said now means that I have to go back to the registrant to get a new acknowledgement after 45 days if I haven't allocated the name. And I don't think that's actually in the best interest of registrants or what you really are doing. So you actually walked into this late. I'd be happy to take it offline with you to explain it to you. But I just want Kathy's record. I don't want Kathy's statement to be interpreted to you, Karen, in a way that I don't believe because she walked in late it was meant.
Yep. Yes, that's understood, Jeff.
And I'm happy to talk to Jeff offline. That's great.
Yep, great. Okay, Mark, and then we'll move to the next section.
I would just add, too, that I think the risk of inaccurate information the potential registrant is also probably pretty low.
Mm-hmm.
The information is verified when it goes into the clearinghouse. So even theoretically, if the trademark clearinghouse record were to expire, the trademark information in the claims notice or for Sunrise, is based on information in the SMD that was verified in order to go into the clearinghouse in the first place. So the clearinghouse record happens to expire during the process, doesn't mean that the underlying trademark information is somehow not valid or correct.
Right. Yep, understand. Thank you. All right, so we've gotten various views on this, and to the extent that people have additional discussions and more feedback, we're happy to receive that. I want to make one comment or a few comments on reserve names. This is not necessarily a broad topic for discussion unless people want to discuss it. But just to confirm that the registry agreement does provide that the registry can reserve names from registration according to the registry policy for according to whatever criteria they might have for names they don't want to be registered in their TLD. The document now requires that if any names are released from, if any names have been reserved initially and then are later released for registration, that they would need to be subject to the trademark claims process, the same as it exists during the claims period. And then, there have been some questions sort of touching on these these sunrise and claims questions about, you know, whether, you know, to what extent registry can reserve names, can they be, you know, do they appear in the who is, can, do they have to go through a registrar? So I understand that there's some more clarification and revisions to the registry agreement going on around around reserve names. So I just wanted to make that comment. Any feedback on reserve names currently? Okay. Then I wanted to comment on the sort of a few other places in the document where we got feedback. The first was testing, which is section one, the very first part of the document. So the feedback that we got in Beijing was from a lot of potential registered operators interested in having a longer period where the testing environment is available, want it to be available earlier. So, you know, it's understood that this is important, that the, you know, the registry and registrar side needs, you know, and it's, everybody's well served by, you know, a lot of, you know, extensive time, significant time to be able to go through those testing processes. So that's feedback that we've, you know, those requests are things that we've taken up with IBM as the provider for this. So those are looking at what we can do there. Secondly, there were some questions and comments around the notice requirement. There were a few questions here about the requirement that registries provide 30 days notice of their sunrise dates and sunrise policies, as well as the any limited registration periods, and as well as their claims period. You know, I think the idea that information is compiled and disseminated on the various TLD launch schedules and processes is helpful to everybody. You know, so we struggled with this a little bit in terms of how it impacts the requirements in a couple of ways. One is, and this is one of the questions we got: why do the registries limited registration periods, if they have any, need to be included in this? They may not have anything to do with rights protection at all, and these aren't periods that are mandatory or that I can't be involved in at all. So, you know, do they need to be in there? And the reason that they are is that, you know, there is a mandatory sunrise period and a mandatory claims period, and to the extent that there are periods in between, it you know, appears to us that it's really part of the same you know, startup progression, and to only put you know, information in on certain periods and then be telling people, well, for that period you have to go to this other source is you know, kind of not as useful as an informational resource. So that's the reason that's there. And then people also, you know, got some questions and comments around the date, since the current draft says that if once a TLD is delegated, that they give their 30 days notice of sunrise. And so, you know, this is something that we, you know, found difficult to do as well, because the, you know, some of the requests were, you know, why can't we provide, you know, notice of our sunrise dates at an earlier time, let the 30 days, you know, commence at an earlier time. And the kind of balancing we've done there is that, you know, the portal or whatever resource the resource ends up having where all this information is, you know, is it helpful to have? Certainly we don't want hypothetical information. I mean, you want the TLD to at least have passed through, you know, some stages of evaluation and post evaluation. But it's a question to people on this call, considering the audience. So is it helpful to the registries if, for example, they put in provisional dates at, you know, say after they've signed the registry agreement? At that point you don't know, how long the pre-delegation and delegation may take. So, you know, to put in dates at that point that are sort of provisional and that may not be able to be met is potentially a problem. And then, you know, is it helpful to the rights holders and to people, consumers generally, if they're, looking at information resource where, you know, there's sort of continual updates that a registry makes in terms of the dates and where the 30 days, how you make sure that there's always, 30 days in there of when an actual sunrise is going to start. Excuse me. So we can talk about that a little bit. Two last things. The fees, comments were that, those belong in the registry agreement. I think that those have been moved and integrated into the revisions of the registry agreement, so they don't need to be repeated here. And then the terms of service, so this is the last part that was included after the sunrise and claims requirements, was the terms of service that a registry and registrar would agree to in terms of accessing the sunrise and claims services. So, and that those terms of service are referenced in the document, and we provided them so that people could have an understanding of what they were. We haven't gotten specific feedback on the language other than, the request for additional discussion that they should, comment or discussions on that aspect, the terms of service, should take a different path than the requirements. So I think that's understood as well. And we have a number of people in the queue. So starting with Chuck on any of these.
Thanks, Karen. Let me ask a general question first, and then I'll talk about testing and fees and terms of service and try and be as brief as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So we're obviously going to run out of time, and I have a lot of comments on the document that really aren't appropriate or useful to give in a session like this, but can those be sent, and should they be sent to you? What's the procedure for that?
So people have been directing comments to me as I invited in Beijing. So two things. One is, as I've said, we intend to take the feedback that we've gotten, and we'll be turning around another revision of this document that would, I think it's intended to be, go through a formal public comment process so that the feedback and dialogue are understood. I think there's some, I think I've seen a few sort of requests going by that, it's fine for people to send feedback to me. It'd be helpful, other people kind of want some visibility into what the feedback is that we're considering. So if it's possible to, make it available more broadly, then that's helpful too.
Sure, I'm happy to do that. The comments I will send you, it will include a few that I had mentioned today, but
mm-hmm.
but a lot more as well. And I've already sent that to the registry stakeholder group, but. I will give you. I'll try and remember to give you permission if there's a place to share it. So that will be fine.
Okay.
Thanks for answering that. Now let me go to testing. I'm going to give you a bunch of questions and comments on testing fairly quickly, and I don't think we're going to have time for you to answer them, but I will run through them very quickly.
Okay.
Will registry testing include registrars? You know, we speaking from VeriSign in this case, would like the ability to include registrars at our option in the testing, and we think that's an important thing to do. It is really not possible to determine whether 14 days is sufficient without knowing the details of the testing plan and procedures. And you've already indicated that the length of the testing time is still under consideration. We really think that a permanent environment for testing is needed, and so that testing can be done anytime. For example, if the provider makes changes, or if registries make changes, or registrars make changes, we need to test those things. So what we're thinking of is something like an OT&E environment, like registries provide to registrars, and so I throw that out. Another important question, will registries be notified what registrars have successfully completed testing, and how will that be done? How promptly will it happen? It's really not clear whether registrars will complete testing solely with the provider or also with registries, and I understand all the complications with that. Will there be capacity to test all registries at the same time registries are doing their testing? All these are really important questions with regard to testing, and it's not clear with regard to registrar testing in terms of how that's going to happen related to registry testing. The requirements in the agreement and subject to the terms of the agreement that are talked about in Section 112, what's the interaction between registries and registrars and all of this? Anyway, these will all be documented in what I send you, but I wanted to raise those. And because of the shortness of time, let me jump to just a couple other things. I made my comments in Beijing on the fees. They still stand. The $5,000 fee for TLD doesn't make any sense, and there's been no transparency with regard to the basis for that. If ICANN is really committed to transparency, there needs to be on that. There's no justification for a registry for each operator or back-end provider to pay the fees over and over, an initial fee over and over again for the same requirements. So some transparency is desperately needed there, and I think an adjustment in the fee structure is needed. Finally, terms of service, and you'll see my comments on there, and they're certainly not going to be directed at you personally, but in the terms of service is a terrible document. It is so one-sided, it's pathetic. There are no protections for registries or registrars, and for that matter, registrants. There is every protection under the sun for ICANN and the provider, which means that there's no accountability for ICANN and the provider in the terms of service. And that is totally not understandable, especially considering that registries and registrars via registrant fees predominantly fund ICANN's existence. There was no effort in this document to protect those who actually fund ICANN's existence, and so I think that's unexcusable. It certainly is not accountable on the part of ICANN, and there's no accountability for the provider in the terms of service, and so I think major changes are in order in that regard. Thanks. I'm sorry for taking so long.
Great. Thank you, Chuck. I've noted all those points. Let's try to get through the line. David Payne, Apilis.
Hi, Karen. I have a suggestion for practice and policy.
Sorry, David. Can you speak up a little bit?
Yeah, just a minute.
Okay, so I have a suggestion about testing that's just kind of a practical matter. It looks like the testing is going to be performed for each registry operator, and they'll be given a temporary credential. And our concern about that is Afilias is the technical service provider for hundreds of PLDs. And so it's kind of a question is, are we really going to have to perform the same test on the same system, getting the exact same results hundreds of times? And, you know, we're not quite sure yet, you know, how expensive the testing itself will be, but, you know, what will be a problem is probably managing that many credentials. And so our suggestion is to base the testing, which is primarily a technical issue, on the registry rather than the registry operator. And, you know, it would just take, if I can take just another minute to make kind of an analogy that I think is helpful. You know, in most countries, to get permission to drive a car, you need to pass a driving test, and then you get a driver's license. But it's pretty rare that you would have to get that the same person would have to take a driving test for every car that they own. Or imagine, you know, if someone asked for your driver's license, you'd have to ask, you know, which car do you need my license for? It's kind of similar, but it's, you know, magnified by a much larger scale when we're talking about, again, doing the same test on the same system hundreds of times and needing to manage that many credentials. And so since it's primarily a technical issue, you know, we recommend that the testing be based on the registry rather than the registry operator, and it would just make our lives and your lives a lot easier.
Thank you, David. That's noted. Jeff?
Yeah, I think David brought up some of my comments that, you know, the whole notion of not being able to test until you sign an agreement is really not applicable to the back-end operator. So back-end operators should be allowed in a lot sooner. There's a lot of noise. It's not coming from here. Is there someone that can put on mute?
Yeah, can we make sure everyone mutes so that we can hear everyone, the speaker?
So, so I support the comment that David made, and also asked you to revisit the issue of when someone can come in to test. On the issue of notice, while I certainly understand your notion of having predictable timelines and, you know, not putting dates that people can't meet. Look, we're in the ICANN community now. We're all used to dates that people can't meet. But more seriously, though, the problem with the document, it says that you can't set the date until after you pass your testing, which, again, just delays business models. It delays, it introduces uncertainty as to when people can actually launch. Just so you know, launches do not take 30 days to plan. Launches take months and months and months to plan. And so ICANN basically not allowing someone to announce the date that they're going to launch until right after they finish testing with the clearinghouse provider is just, it's not acceptable. It's not a way that people do business. And it sounds like a rule that a policy person as opposed to a business person would set. So the comments we raised with respect to when you have to set notice for your sunrise really needs to be taken into consideration by business people as opposed to policy, that you can't create this rule that makes no sense. And my last comment on the terms of service, I really think that discussion doesn't belong in this tech group or doesn't belong with you, Karen. It actually belongs with the a negotiating team of registries, registrars, and ICANN legal, and really should immediately be moved into that type of environment so that we're not commenting on a legal agreement in this group. So my request is that you immediately move the discussion of legal terms and conditions to the appropriate legal community to have that worked out. Thanks.
Thanks, Jeff. So all those are noted. And just on the last point on the terms of service, I think if there's support for that, I mean, that's kind of what I meant by saying that there's a different path maybe for the terms of service. If there's support for, you know, people working on that through the same mechanisms where the registry agreement's under discussion, that's the way forward. James?
Thanks, Karen. James Mitchell, ARI Registry Services. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear
Hello?
You.
Yeah. Yeah,
we
great.
Hear
Okay, so I've got two comments here. First, I'd just like to absolutely stress the importance of testing. We are implementing our solution currently for the ECD validation, et cetera. And one thing we've come across is that sample SMDs that we've generated don't validate with the SDK published by Verisign and vice versa. And so obviously official SMDs from the trademark clearing house would go a long way to clarifying what is actually required. On that, we will be in contact with Verisign to try to identify what problems there are over the next few days. Including, seeing that something as simple as like a leading space in a mark name may render an SMD unusable, right? So, to Chuck's comment, I'd prefer to extend testing like through end to end, right? Including submission of the mark through to the CMDB, the generation of the SMD, and then the use of that SMD. So, the second comment is regarding the claims. During release of reserved names, would claims also be required for the release of an IDN table? Thanks.
Okay, thank you, James. So those questions are noted as well for follow up and clarification. Vlad, next.
Good day. Can you hear me? Vlad Nicholas, .fm. Reference to your previous slide regarding the reservation of names, what you just noted that most GeoTLDs face with us as well is that we tend to have a reservation, as for example, such for near programs like Asia, for instance. And you stipulated that trademark claim service is required for the release of these names. I think that is kind of backwards, that if we had to release these names, it's obviously to pay individuals looking to grow the community. Somebody with a trademark comes along and says, well, I'm not going to grow it, but I have got a trademark on the following name that you have reserved. How are we to handle that? I believe that needs a bit of revision from your guys' side.
All right. Thank you, Vlad. I'm sorry to say I didn't quite hear your question. There was a lot of noise, so would you mind repeating the gist of the question?
The just the question is that regarding the reservation of names for such programs as Pioneer programs, whereby certain individuals bring forward a business plan and the registry reserves certain names, we then release it to them so that it can grow the community. Why do we require trademark claim services for those reserved names when it's basically?
Yeah, thank you. So, so I think that, there's a few things that people mean when they talk about, Pioneer programs. The intention of the clause in the document is about, names that are reserved initially and then released at some future period. So depending on the implementation of the periods that could be applicable. So we'll try to provide some additional clarity there.
Thank you.
Amadeu?
Okay, I think I am unmuted now. Two short things. One, regarding terms of service, I completely support what first Chuck said and then Jeff also procedurally. They don't belong here, and they should be, they should be terms of service, not terms of vassalage. Really, this is about feudalism, how they are drafted now. The other question is regarding the fees, and I support, regarding the testing as well. As much testing to anybody, what's the benefit of delaying the testing for anybody? I don't think that's the point. Now, the other question regarding the fees, which I think is very important. We have this equal fee of, $7,000 or $8,000, I don't remember, for each TLD registry. It's quite bizarre that a big .web and a small .run, whatever, should pay the same, but anyway, let's forget that. The second question is 30 cents during the first, it was for 60, now 90 days of general availability. But if we run, as we want to propose, both all Sunrise and limited period registration phases in parallel, then IP claims must start on the first day of the launch period, and that will last for 2 or 3 months. So we are into 120 and 150 or 180 days where the 30 cents per domain name registered should apply. And my question is, there is no scale here? That is, there is no relationship between the number of names and the period and the unit price? I don't think this really scales. The other question is, we wanted, and we offered that in the application, we wanted to offer that, you know, voluntarily, even after the end of the mandatory period. But A, we have not been able to get any response from the Toronto Clinic House where we can discuss that, and B, if the price is 30 cents always, it doesn't make any sense. I think that 30 cents is more than what I can take to control the registries, which is 25 cents, or what the registrar pays to ICANN for registration, which is, you know, 18 cents to keep the house going along. And for something that's completely automated in the Toronto Clinic House, we are requested to pay 30 cents, I repeat, no matter what, no matter how long, it doesn't scale.
Okay, thank you, Amadeo. So that's noted. Just as I said earlier, that you know, I believe the fees won't be part of this document going forward, but will be part of the main text of the registry agreement. And I think there's been feedback to the, you know, the details of that in that process. All right, so we are at 2 hours. So if anyone needs to drop off, they should go ahead and do that. But I wanted to take a few minutes just in the event that there's any other topics of concern that I didn't raise or that nobody raised that you think that we need to be aware of in considering the revisions. All right. If not, I thank everybody for their participation. I thought the feedback and the discussion was very helpful on a number of these issues. So thank you again. The slides and the recording will be posted as soon as I can get it up there, and I'll distribute it as well to the list of attendees to this call. Thank you very much.